You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's a great day in the city of Chicago. It's sunshiny. It's beautiful. It's wonderful, and I hope it's wonderful where you are. And those for the people in Louisiana, if I can say the word, my tongue gets kind of twisted sometimes. Louisiana, I mean, it's really bad. It's really bad. I mean, rescuing. I believe there's 20,000 people who have been rescued so far, and over 12,000 people who are now in shelters because of the massive flooding that's going on in Louisiana. And we got to think of the wildfires out there in California. They said they have some sort of a suspect in custody for those fires. So we have to pray for those people who have lost everything, they don't have anything. Wildfires, flooding, water can be your enemy just as your friend, but and fires also. So we have to pray for those people who've lost everything and pray that they get back on their feet some sort of way. But here in Chicago, and I hope where you are, that it's nice and sunny and bright. You know, I know it's not like that all over the world, but you know, I'm bragging. So it is great. It is wonderful. I'm sitting here in my studio. We're near the lake, folks. And I have this great big window in front of me, and I can see, you know, outside. Some people can see inside. So I have to say something about the weather, and it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And I think this has been one of the greatest summers. That's ever been, 2016. You know, I do. That's my opinion. And some other people may think the same way, but, you know, who cares? Well, actually, we all should care because it's a great day. It's a great day in Chicago. And thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for your calls. Thank you for your, what I want to say, being a guest on the show, you know, and thank you for all your accolades, and thank you for promoting the show in every way that you can, you know, so because as always, this show is always about making the world a better place. That's all it's about. I mean, if it wasn't about that, I don't think I could do it. I mean, helping one another, helping people out, helping people. And that's one of the things that's going on in Louisiana. Grassroots, ordinary people helping their neighbors out. You know, this is not about anything that's political. It's not about who's the best or trying to outdo somebody. This is people who are just ordinary people helping each other out, saving their city, saving lives, you know, in the midst of these fires and floodings. But, you know, you're going to find politicians who are going to try and make this a political issue. They're going to try and get votes out of it, you know, when it has nothing to do with them. But this is just great people helping out their neighbors. And I want to applaud those people. I really, really do, because all of this falls in the realm of what this show is all about. And that is making the world a better place if we can. It's tough. It's rough. It's a mess. But we are out here lending a hand. And I'd like to thank all those people out here who are taking a hold of the youth and trying to turn them around to keep them from going in a negative direction, in the wrong direction, you know, and try to get that talent to reach inside of themselves and pull out that talent that everybody has. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me right here on Blog Talk Radio. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Google. I'm all over the place. And it is just such a great day. And right now it's Tuesday, August 16th. If you're podcasting this show, it might be a little earlier. So that's one of the greatest things I like about podcasting. You can listen to the show anytime you want to. You can even put it on your website. You can do what you want to do, especially if you're a guest on the show. There's always a chance that you can get a link to the show and put it on your website. Not promoting me, but promoting yourself on this show, and so that the people can come by your website and listen to you on this show. All right, let's go to the phone to see. We have a phone call, an early phone call, but let's see what we can come up with. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead. You've been waiting a while.
Hey, it's Alexis. I called a little bit early. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I guess you heard me talking about the weather a little earlier.
Yes, I sure did.
So how is the weather where you are? I mean, you know, to kind of break the ice.
It is actually hot here in Atlanta. It's been a very tropical summer here. It has been excruciating hot and humid. So it's been interesting, though, but that's why I moved to the South. So I'm not, complaining about it. I'm enjoying it. It's just exceptionally hotter than what it would normally be, if that makes sense.
You know what? It's always the humidity. I mean, it can be hot, but it's the humidity that kills you, you know, because in some instances, it could be 78 degrees in the city of Chicago, but that humidity will make it feel like it's even hotter. You know, so right. The humidity is always is not a good thing. So tell everybody about yourself. Am I speaking to Alexis Nicole?
This is me. I just called in a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I said, wow, this you were on before 6. I said, oh, someone's holding. Okay. All right. Then you hung up and you came back.
Yeah, because okay, I wanted to make sure that I pressed the right button. But yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm just here. I'm still working in Atlanta. So it's just, you know, having a normal work day for me. And I was just multitasking at the same time while I waited. So it's not a big deal.
Are you one of those who migrated back to Atlanta, who once lived in Chicago or up north somewhere, and then you decided to go back?
Yes, that is exactly what happened. Actually, I was born and raised in Gary, moved around the Midwest. My mother actually was a supervisor for Ford. She went to Purdue with me as well. Not at the same time, but she went to Purdue as well. And what ended up happening was she left working GM and ended up going to Ford. They transferred her to Atlanta. So I lived here once before. And then we ended up moving back from Atlanta to Detroit because Ford moved us back to Detroit. And so that's how I kept going back and forth. But as an adult, I always wanted to come back to the South. Like, I just knew that this was home. It felt like home. It was one of those things where I just knew that this is where I wanted to and needed to be. So I just came back here.
Oh, wow. Oh, no problem with that. You love it. You love it. So we have to love it, too, because, you know, it's what you enjoy. All right. Alexis, Nicole, tell us about yourself. Give us a bio and all that good stuff.
Well, I am an author. I speak to people. I'm actually joining a radio show here in Atlanta called The Queen's Haven. And I do a number of things. My primary focus is to make sure that I'm speaking to women and people, but specifically women, the importance of emotional health. And so in writing my book, I decided to share my story with people because I found myself being on the defense a lot when I would tell people about things that I mischievously found myself being in. And for some reason or another, people, you know, tend to not believe it to be factual or, you know, that it's whatever, you know, they tend to believe. So in that, I use that as a learning opportunity for me to be able to speak to people, to talk about the fundamentals of emotional health, and for people to be educated on the signs and symptoms of emotional abuse and how it affects us, because many of us don't perceive this to be a real thing. So that's what I'm doing now, and just speaking to people and educating them and enriching and equipping people to be happy and to live successfully and to have prosperous relationships in every area of their lives.
Okay. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. So that's what I've been up to.
Oh, okay. When you say emotional health, can you break that down a little bit, you know, in pieces and parts, to let everybody know what you're talking about? Can you do that?
Absolutely. Emotional health is one of those things that people do not perceive to be a real thing. I mean, we know it, but we don't really perceive it to be factual and that we can be affected by it. Emotional health is how you feel, the things that you're dealing with, the ways that you process the things that you're dealing with, the things that are how you govern your thought process from day to day. It's literally your mental health. When it comes to emotional health, many people just tend to omit when something is really bothering them, when they're seeing signs of something. Usually when you're seeing a sign of something, it's already a problem. So you might have prolonged the problem or solutioning the problem because you band-aided, especially when it comes to relationships. So there's several types of emotional abuse. There's financial abuse. Usually you know that situation where there has been a stay-at-home mother or wife who may be at the point in her life where she decides she no longer wants to be in a relationship or her husband decides to leave her, and then she has no material assets. She has no money of her own, no bank account, things like that. The man was in control of everything. And, you know, although some people agree to that lifestyle, it is called financial abuse. Another type of abuse would be psychological abuse, where people are actually doing things psychologically to destroy you, locking you in a room, you know, locking you in a basement. Another type of abuse would be mental abuse, obviously verbal, when they're saying things to you to make you question yourself, when they're calling you out of your name, they're yelling at you, they're threatening you, but never really putting their hands on you, but just doing things to make you fearful inside of your mind. Aside from that, it's the physical abuse, which we all know is domestic violence. And then it's the sexual abuse, where someone either may lock you up as a sex slave, or they may rape you, or you may have been raped, or they may touch you and grope you and make you do things that you really don't want to do. So those are all the different types of abuse that fall underneath the emotional abuse umbrella, which is why it's very important to educate people on these things, because many people experience these things each and every day, and they have no idea what's going on to them.
That's exactly. I mean, you got people all around you experiencing a lot of the things you just got through talking about. They won't say anything about it. They won't go call anybody. They won't go try to get any help. They just suffer through it.
And a lot of it is, George, is that when people realize, if they realize that they have a problem, because many people don't, especially if they grew up in a household where their parents were maybe verbally abusive to one another, or domestic violence. You know, you grow up thinking some things are normal when they're not, okay? And sometimes people, you know, I mean, I hate to say it like that, but that's the truth of it. And then sometimes you have individuals who may realize that they have a problem, or something doesn't feel comfortable to them, or don't feel good, and they don't feel good about it. And they try to speak to others, and that's when we exude emotional abuse towards them from a platonic standpoint, because we use condemnation and humiliation to make them feel worse about their situation instead of edifying them and building them up and trying to get them the help that they need. So often when this happens, people just, you know, they go into a shell and they don't say anything at all because they're fearful of what other people's responses are going to be. So it's something definitely important to talk about.
Yeah. Have you yourself experienced any of these things that you've trying to help other people with? Have you had any of those emotions? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. When I first moved to Atlanta, I was a victim of mental abuse as well as financial abuse. I was destitute, and I moved here and was solely relying upon someone else to help me and to pay for things. And because of that, that whole thing is so serious, you know, because you want to do better, i.e. leave, mm-hmm. but you can't because, you know, you don't have money. And guess what? It takes money to do everything in this world. A lot of people who are victim of this, they may not have credit, you know what I mean? They may have bad credit, no credit at all, which is worse than bad credit. They don't have the resources. They can't, you know, what can you do without money, you know? So it's a very painful thing to be in, knowing that you're in a messed up situation and it's nothing that you can do to get out of it. You just have to suffer. And, you know, it takes most people the thought of saying, you know what, I'd rather be homeless than to deal with this. And that's what happened to me. And I had to rebuild myself out of that determination of I can't take this anymore. Like, I literally started to lose my mind. I dealt with hallucinations. I mean, just crazy things. I was sleep deprived. I couldn't, I lost a lot of weight. You know, I mean, just all kind of things. And I didn't understand it because I was uneducated to what I was experiencing. But now as a more mature adult who understands, you know, the implications of what I subjected myself to, I now know that that was just absolutely 100% unhealthy for me. And I speak to women who deal with that every day.
And you sharing your experiences with some of these emotions to try and help other women who are going through some of these things. And like you say, it's happening every day, all the time. And and I congratulate you for that. I think that's great, you know, because you out here trying to help other people who are, like I just got through saying, who are going through some of the same things you're going. But I want to ask a question. Is finances, this is just, you know, me asking you, is finances a very, very important part of a relationship?
You know what it is, because if you're in a marriage or you're seeking to become married, you're going to merge and become one. And so, you know, I've dealt with women, and when I say dealt with, I've talked to women, but I've spoken with women who, you know, they may have had good credit and their husband may not have had good credit, and that has become a problem because the husband destroyed the wife's credit, or, you know, the wife didn't have any credit, or it was bad, you know. So it sets the tone for financial problems in a relationship. So, you know, it depends on where you are and where you are in the stage of your relationship. Now, if you're just cordially dating, I personally feel like it's not the other person's business, because what are you're not getting married. But, you know, if you're getting married, I definitely think it's something that you guys need to talk about and make sure that it's clear, because, you know, individuals have student loan debt. They have high credit card debt. They may have failed business loan debts, whatever it is, that once you get married to that person, you know, now you're being affected by their poor choices or lack of thereof. You see what I'm saying when it comes to finances? So, you know, you definitely want to make sure that you're conscientious as to what you're getting yourself into.
And that could end a marriage. It probably ended a lot of marriages. Money. And so I'm kind of trying to think of what else I wanted to ask. You ever wanted to ask a question and all of a sudden you forget?
It's okay.
All right, no problem. I got so many computer screens in front of me. Sometimes it takes my mind off of what I should be on. Okay. Let's talk about your book. What's the title?
The Covered. And The Covered is a memoir that was birthed out of frustration, in all honesty, because I found myself I'm a black female. I am a millennial. I believe in, you know, church and church relationships, and I appreciate those. And so as a young adult, I found myself immersing my life in church as a single woman, going to the comfort of what I believed were people who were in a similar faith of me, with me, and could stand in belief with me and pray for me and understand me, you know, because there are a lot of single women in church. And so I found myself experiencing a lot of ridicule and scrutiny and just condemnation from the women in my church whenever it came a point. Because I'm going to tell you why. And I say this in my book, and I know it may turn a lot of people off, but just hear me out. If we're honest with ourselves, in the Black church, we tend to pretend that things don't exist. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we perceive this to be that way, because some things, I believe in the power of God and all of that, but some things you just can't pray away. You know, you just can't pray away the LGBT community. You can't just pray away, you know, infidelity in marriages, problems in marriages. I mean, all of that stuff, right? So what ended up happening was there was a church member of mine whose husband was cheating on her, and she was expressing a lot of frustration about it. And it was a group of women whom she was talking to. And I just did not like the tone of the conversation, in all honesty, that it appeared as though they were blaming this particular lady for her husband's, you know, poor discretion. And okay. I just started to share with them how I have been in that situation before, and I did not know. And I was explaining to them, like, sometimes women know. Yes, they do. Not all the time. And so I was explaining to them how I found out and how it took years for me to find out. And they attacked mm-hmm. me as if I should have known better. And I mean, just what I mentioned earlier, that platonic emotional abuse. And they just made me feel so defeated and unlike a child of God. Like, I felt like they threw everything at me but the kitchen sink, instead of listening and understanding what it was that I was saying. And so because of that, I decided to tell my life story, because I found myself being one of those people where folks always say, this can be a movie, because things just always happen when I'm not looking for it to happen. And so I wrote the book to help women understand you can be an intelligent, professional woman. You can be Christ-oriented. You can serve in the ministry. You can, you know, work out 8 times a week or whatever it is that you want to do. And bad things can still happen to you being in the right places at the right time and minding your own business. You can just arbitrarily meet the wrong people, and which I have. That doesn't make me a bad person.
Yeah, I have too.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. I've met a lot of bad people too. And sometimes you can't help but to come run into them. Sometimes you don't know they're bad until you actually get to know them really well. You know, so I've been through some of the things that you've been through. I've been, you know, manipulated, lied to, blamed for things that wasn't my fault, you know, and people just the people doing the blaming, they want to see things one way, and that's their way, you know, instead of looking at the evidence and whatever. So I've been through a lot of those things. And why do you think men cheat?
Well, I think it's for a couple of different reasons. And I actually just had this conversation with some of my peers from the radio station. But it's a couple of different things. When men cheat, in my opinion, and from inductive research, it's not because they're not satisfied at home. I think it's more so because they just want a variety. Men are prayers. They are hunters and gatherers. That's innate in them. And I think it's the pursuit of the chase that makes them,
you know,
honestly. Go ahead.
Well, I think I was going to say, you really can't put all men in one basket. I mean,
No. This is a generalization. That's a generalization.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Right. Exactly. So you really can't put all men in one basket. You can.
I'm speaking for the cheaters, the habitual cheaters. I guess I should define the type of man I'm referring to. I'm referring to the man who is married, who still does all of the things that he should do at home, but he may just dib and dab on the side. The habitual cheater, but has no intention on leaving. Mm-hmm. That's the person I'm talking about. The person that has no reason to discredit his wife, no reason to humiliate his wife in that way, no reason to dip out. That's the person I'm talking about. The selfishness, the I'm just bored and I'm going to go cheat on my wife because she's at the hair salon or whatever it is that, you know, you have that window of opportunity to cheat in. That's what I'm referring to. So I'm using that as a sample size of when I explain my definition of a cheater. But no, you cannot put all men into one basket.
Yeah, because I've known some good brothers. I really have. And they were just, you know, diehard good husbands and boyfriends, and they were great. And then there's the rotten ones, you know, out. And you can also say some of this for women too. They're not always angel-like in some of their perceptions.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and domestic violence. I mean, I'm an advocate for domestic violence because I growing up, I've seen a lot of it, and I just don't understand why some women actually stay in a relationship with someone who is abusive. There's all kinds of reasons people have given, but from my standpoint, there is no good reason to stay with somebody who's controlling you.
Well, now let me give you a contrary to that. When I say dealt with, I mean spoke to. I've encountered a lot of women who actually have tried to leave, and I think this is the side of domestic violence that we don't see, and it's really enough to be outraged about, because when women try to leave their abuser, there is no help for them. When I say there is no help for them, I mean you can call the police. But that's not going to help you get immediately out of that situation. Leaving a domestic partner who abuses you physically is a process to which you have to plan, because he's not just controlling you with fear and intimidation tactics. He's usually controlling your money as well. He knows you. So he knows where you're going to go. He knows what you're going to do. He knows you, because that's just how they are. Okay. So it's not like, you know, even if you think about what's love got to do with Tina Turner and Ike, right? You saw how she kept trying to leave and she kept getting caught. You know what I mean? So it literally took her running for her life, impromptu, boom, because every time she tried to plan to leave, you know, he would find her. You know, she'd come into the mama's house, he'd pop up there. You know what I mean? So, and I mean that's an extreme, but that happens every day, where women are trying to get help. The police don't help them. You know, you have to have them come to the house in the midst of, in order for them to really arrest them. I was about to say surge protectors, but that's not it. The 50 feet rule, that stuff doesn't work because there's no one there to enforce that. You know, I mean, let's just be honest. So, and then again, it's the money issue. You know, where can I go with no money and resources? How can I get there if this person is controlling and manipulating everything that I do? So it's like, I almost understand, not justifying it and not saying that this is okay, but I understand how women get trapped in a cycle.
Nicole, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Okay. All righty. Do you have an excerpt of your book that you would like to share?
I sure do.
Go right ahead.
So, just giving you a description of where I was. I was in a very dark, dark, dark place in my life. And this is chapter 7 of the book, From the Covered. Mm-hmm. And here we go. I just lost my page.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's
this is
fine.
Called
we
darkness.
All do.
This is called darkness. And it's just one page. But by the end of the summer,
yeah. All right. Okay.
My relationship, this was the shortest chapter of the whole book. By the end of the summer, my relationship with Sean became very toxic. I couldn't keep up the facade anymore. Being miserable influenced my decision to chop off my hair, going shorter than before. I lost weight. I didn't sleep through the night. I did, however, vent in my blog. Every week or two, Monique and I were at odds. An altercation crept around every post. It didn't matter who started it. Sean always protected her by defending her. I literally lost my mind. I experienced panic attacks. My eyes played tricks on me. My blood pressure raised expeditiously, and particularly when Monique came around. The woes of living there began to affect me. In the beginning, I thought I had control. I didn't have one inch of control over my situation. Being able to manipulate a situation doesn't mean that you have any control over it. It means that you can influence it in your favor. In the beginning, that was an option. Now, not so much. I performed one of the greatest compromises of my life. Either I survived in Atlanta or I returned back to Gary as a failure. It were that simple. Succeed as a transplant or move back home as a boomerang kid. One of the two.
Where can we find it?
Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, Amazon, any bookstore has my book.
Oh, great. How wonderful. Are you working on another book?
I am. It's entitled Burnt Out. I don't really have a release date yet for it. I'm taking my time with that to really capture that voice, you know, of when women or people, period, but again, women, experience that ultimate burnout where there's just like no hope, frustration, like it's just there. You're just done, you know, and how do you get up from there?
Oh, okay. All righty. Do you have a website?
Absolutely. It is AlexisNicoleWhite.com. And I am available on Facebook at AlexisNicoleWhite, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at IamMissAlexis, Google Plus, at AlexisNicoleWhite. And I think that's like all of the social medias.
Okay, I'm all over the place too, believe me. Is there anything you haven't said that you would like to say to my audience, to the listeners out there?
Surround yourself with people that genuinely support you, that you can confide in, and that you can always be transparent, fearless, and resilient with each and every situation, and you can overcome anything. But that foundation support system is an absolute must.
Right. Exactly. Nicole, Alexis, Nicole on the George Wilder Jr. Show, you've been great. Would you like for me to send you a link to the show so maybe you can put it on your website and you know, the people who read your book and listen to you can come by your website, click on this, and listen to you on this show?
Absolutely.
All righty. No problem. Thanks for being on the show. You were great.
Thank you so much. You have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Alexis Nicole on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. One of the greatest guests on the show. You've just got through listening to her, Alexis Nicole. And she really knows her stuff, right? She really knows her stuff. All right. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio right here. And anything goes. I'm going to read this quote. Simple people are being brainwashed by the media's social media corporations. They manipulate you into thinking you are wrong when you are right. That is so true. I mean, this is why I always tell my son and I tell other people, do not believe everything you read. Do not believe everything you see on television, even everything you hear on the news or everything you see on the internet or online or whatever. It's not always factual. And some of the stuff, if you believe one thing, if you believe you write about a certain issue, there's going to be somebody somewhere who may just try to prove that you are wrong about something that you are dead right on. And you just have to figure these things out. You can't believe everything you read. I mean, I go to Facebook all the time. I don't believe half the stuff that I see on Facebook. Believe me. I don't believe half of it. If something strikes my interest on Facebook or LinkedIn, I'm going to research and try to find it somewhere else. If I can find it somewhere else on credible websites, then I probably will start to believe in it. You know, but I have to research it and look, go to vital websites that I believe in, that I know of, to be truthful for that certain kind of information that I can prove to be true. You know, a lot of the things that I say on the show are true because I'm looking at credible news sources, websites, and all this kind of thing. But there are always those people who will try to say, well, George, that's not right. That's wrong. I mean, you should look at it this way. I mean, they explain themselves so eloquently trying to get me to believe that I shouldn't believe what I'm reading, even when it's true. False information is everywhere and we fall for it. It is all over the place and people are so easily fooled. There's a clip by a young lady and she explains this kind of thing so eloquently and so intelligently. And it's true. It's very true. I'm going to find that clip. I don't know if we have it or if I've downloaded it and installed it somewhere on a hard drive, but I'm going to have to find it or just look for it again because it's very true and it's current. It's not old, it's current. And I'm going to do this again. False information is everywhere and we fall for it. It is all over the place and people are so easily fooled, especially the ones who think they're smart. That's true too. Actually, this is my quote. I wrote it, and I'm repeating it because it's true. It is true. All right, let's move right along. Donald Trump, 100 plus GOP insiders are on attack. They are trying to get Donald Trump to resign. There's been something out saying that Donald Trump has hired Roger Ailes, the ousted executive of Fox News, who was ousted because of sexual harassment. So if this is true, Donald Trump is not helping himself any. Again, Donald Trump shoots himself in the foot, then he tries to blame everybody because of it. But he's down. Donald Trump, as you probably know, if you're following this guy is down in the polls everywhere. Everywhere. And I've been talking about him on the show almost every day because he's always in the news. And I talk about him because we don't want to see this guy as president. We got to make sure because he could wind up being president. Michael Moore, if you know Michael Moore, who he is, he's a documentary maker, filmmaker. And he said a few weeks ago that Donald Trump will be president. So all of a sudden now he's saying Donald Trump in some ways will not be president. So you get, you know, I don't know about Michael Moore, but he's a nice guy. I'm thinking he's a liberal. Anyway, insiders, RNC, Republican National Congress must abandon Trump. you know, they're talking about abandoning and, you know, just leaving him out. They want to get rid of Trump and elevate Mike Pence, his vice president. That's what they want. Because Trump is an unusual candidate. And I'm quoting something he said. He's saying, I am who I am. I can't change. Yeah, yeah, he is who he is. Unfit to be president, right? He is that.
Listen, can we set politics aside for a second and appreciate that history was made last week?
I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
We have waited our whole lives to hear a... Thank you. I am Samantha Bee. Welcome to Full Frontal. Listen, can we set politics aside for a second?
Yeah, I was saying that Simone Biles is the greatest ever. She's gotten 4 gold medals and 1 silver. You know, and I was saying that she fell off the bar. She didn't actually fall off the bar. She held on. She just wobbled a little bit. And that's why those points were deducted from her score. But she's going to be the greatest. She's going to be around forever. And we're going to see her again in a lot of commercials, folks, a lot of commercials. I'm proud of her as if she was my own daughter. I'm totally proud of her. All right. Here's Samantha Bee. Like I said before. All right. Let's go.
Thank you. I am Samantha Bee. Welcome to Full Frontal. Listen, can we set politics aside for a second and appreciate that history was made last week?
I accept your nomination for president.
We have waited our whole lives to hear a woman say those words and then immediately get criticized for the voice she said them in. Gosh, you boys sure hate your mothers, don't you? Lucky for Democrats, their big shindig followed the 4-day blooper reel that was the Republican convention. A poorly attended rage-a-thon featuring a parade of hemorrhoidal has-beens trying to literally scare up votes by making America shit its pants.
Every American should be terrified.
I half expected to close my mirror in the Cleveland Holiday Inn and see Newt Gingrich with a knife. TerrorCon 16 set the bar so low for the Democrats, we couldn't wait to see how they'd trip over it. After all, this is the party that brought us the 2004 classic, Fucked Up Balloon Drop.
No balloons, no balloons, we need more balloons. All balloons should be going. Come on, guys, let's move it.
What a catastrophe. The balloons were a mess, too. So, okay, Democrats, go on now. Your turn to embarrass the nation.
That is the story of this country, the story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done so that today, I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves, and I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn.
I'm not crying. I've just got tears coming out of my wherever. And sure, America's racists lost their shit, forcing multiple news sites to fact-check the idea that slavery happened. It did. And when this election is over, we need to have a serious talk about education in this country. While the superdelegates scrambled to switch their votes to Michelle Obama, the DNC proceeded to put on a USA love fest that left us feeling like we just got a national blowjob from the American flag.
Don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great.
Our best days are ahead of us.
Americans have never, ever, ever, ever let their country down. Never. Never.
All pledging allegiance under the same proud flag.
The greatest country on this planet.
America, we
will rise.
God bless America.
America.
America. America.
I'm not crying. I just have America in my eye. The convention was an unexpected triumph of positive messaging and flawless showmanship. Turns out, the Democrats had this in them all along, and all it took for them to get their shit together was the looming certainty of Armageddon. Bastards! The party of dreamers and immigrants wanted everyone to know they welcome refugees. In particular, refugees from the Republican Party, some of whom are feeling as homeless right now as the working poor they've been shafting for decades.
What we heard in Cleveland last week wasn't particularly Republican. See, my grandparents, they came from the heartland, small town folk. Some were Democrats, but a lot of them, maybe even most of them, were Republicans. Party of Lincoln. That's what happens when you're the kind of citizen Teddy Roosevelt once described. Ronald Reagan called America a shining city on a hill.
Come on, Republicans, who are you going to listen to? Agent Orange or Black Reagan? The entire week was an implicit middle finger to Trump's dystopian view of America, mixed in with some first-class trolling of a certain Law and Order cop humper.
I served as an NYPD officer.
I spent 27 years on the Orlando Police Force.
When I was Philadelphia Police Commissioner.
As a police officer.
Police officers are good people, doing a good job.
An attack on a police officer anywhere is an attack on our entire society.
Dad, as all of you now know, liked Police Academy. My mom and I loved Pride and Prejudice.
Damn, Chelsea just plagiarized both the Republican convention themes. But in 4 days of powerful rebukes to Trumpism, the most devastating came from the father of Captain Humayun Khan, who sacrificed his life while saving his fellow soldiers in Iraq.
You have sacrificed nothing, Donald Trump. You're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
He means it. He even picked out a copy of the Constitution small enough for Trump to fit in his hand. Now, naturally, America's burst appendix couldn't let that one slide.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me.
She was too choked up from seeing her son's picture. Why are you allowed to have anything to say? Now, unlike the bleak, militaristic scowling displayed on stage at the end of the Republican convention, this one ended with a joyful, affectionate celebration, particularly for Bill Clinton, who timed it perfectly so the shrooms were just kicking in. Balloons far out. So there she is, the official nominee, ready to face her greatest challenger, herself.
The truth is, through all these years of public service, the service part has always come easier to me than the public part.
Well, fortunately, the job of president doesn't have any public parts, so you'll be fine. Look, can we get an Obama out here to do the rousing oratory? Sasha, Bo, any of them?
There has never been a man or a woman, not me, not Bill, nobody more qualified than Hillary Clinton to serve as president of the United States of America.
He's right. I wasn't ready. Now, the president's endorsement was echoed by the vice president, the former president, the TV president, senators, governors, athletes, preachers, the working poor, the self-made billionaire, Republicans, and, oh, just for good measure, half the fucking Pentagon standing on stage saying, vote for Hillary if you want to live. That is how good you have to be if you're a woman running for president. And she still might lose to this, the least qualified candidate ever to lurch into the public spotlight and shit on Gold Star Moms while cradling Putin's sweaty sack. Let's hope Hillary doesn't get lipstick on her teeth between now and November or it's all over. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Samantha Bee on the George Wilder Jr. Show. That's a clip, as you probably know, but she's always great. I love her show. I think she's super duper. All righty. Simone Biles, we were talking about Simone Biles. She is going to take it, folks. She's already won it, actually, but they're going to show a repeat of it tonight on television because this is August 16th, 2016. Okay, you listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We were talking earlier about the crime. I hope you enjoyed my guest, Alexis Nicole. She's seemed to know her stuff. And that's what I do enjoy. People come on the show who know what they're talking about and can able to help you and me understand a little bit more about what they're trying to do, especially when it comes to trying to make the world a better place, because this is something that's, you know, need to be done. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I have some of the great guests, great callers. I mean, this is the talk of our times. I can't reiterate this enough because I love what I'm doing and I wouldn't stop for nothing in the world, even though it's costing me. But it's fun. I enjoy it, or I would not do it. And let's see, defendant boats from. Okay, we're looking at the Chicago Sun-Times here. It says defendant boats. He runs from Chicago, from a Chicago courtroom, but doesn't get far. Okay, some guy, I don't want to read the article, but some guy was taken to court this morning and decides he doesn't want to stay. Some criminal decides he doesn't want to stay and he runs. He runs, but he doesn't get far. So that's one of the many things that's happening in Chicago. Teachers get tough civics lesson after bucking ROM. Wow. And we've had so many kids protesting Rahm Emanuel, Governor Bruce Rauner in the city of Chicago, because these are the culprits to why Chicago public schools are broke. Of course, they're broke because the state is not sending money legislating money for these schools. You know, and it's not just Chicago public schools, it's downstate schools too. Some of these downstate politicians are there in Rauner's ass also, but he doesn't budge. And the thing about it, folks, the guy wants to run for re-election. He wants to run again. What the hell are you going to run again? You can't even get a budget for the state of Illinois as in the Illinois Constitution. If you haven't got a budget for the state of Illinois, you haven't. You're not doing your job. He can do all the executive orders and actions he wants. But until you get a budget, a full year budget, not a stopgap budget, not a half year budget, but a full year budget, a full budget, you have not done your job. And I do think that they're moving along the lines of voter suppression. You know, that's the only way the Republicans can win, is to stop people from voting, coming up with excuses to stop people from voting and going to the polls. Because they know if people vote, their asses will never, ever get in the office. But and I've said this before. A reason why we have a lot of Republicans in office who are now ruining their states, you know, cutting programs, cutting this and that away from children and the elderly. You know, we got them because people did not vote. You didn't get up off your ass and vote. And now you're wondering, why are your Social Security check cut? Why are your food stamps cut? Why is your benefits cut? Your rental assistance? You didn't get up off your ass and vote. You expect other people to do it for you. You got to get out there and do your own thing. You know what I'm saying? And as I get back to author Alexis Nicole, I can relate to her on some things. She said she was homeless. She had to pick herself up. She had to do things for herself. And now she's out there trying to help other people. It's the same thing I'm doing. I mean, you know, you really can't help other people who are going through certain things if you have not gone through them yourself. If you've had a rough patch through your life, in your life, and you made it through, you want to help others who are going through some of those same exact things or even worse. so they can, so you can educate them on how to lift themselves up, get themselves up out of the gutter, and make something of themselves, and just go back to the people who helped put them there and just say, to hell with you. And I love having people on the show like that. I love having people on the show that I can relate to, because some of the things that they've gone through, I may have gone through some of them myself in my earlier years here on earth. So that's great to know that there's people out there who say, George, hey, we've gone through some of the same things like that, so we know what you're talking about and we sympathize with you. And now, since you've gone through that and we've gone through that, now let's get together and go out and help other people who are going through those type of things right now as I speak. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and it is still a great day in the city of Chicago. Hey, summer is on its last leg. Yeah, the days are starting to get shorter, and that's a bummer. That's a total bummer. But hey, it's nature. It's what's happening. It's what we have to deal with. And, you know, it's great. It's wonderful. It's, you know, you can talk about all the negativity that you want, but it's, but you are blessed every day that you get up, you know, to go to work, to go to school. You're blessed to have good friends, to have a great and loving family. You're blessed. You know, some of us are not blessed at those things, but if you have those kind of things, you are blessed. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's do this song right here. It's interesting. I want to do it because it's interesting.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone.
Lord, we don't need another mountain.
There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb.
Enough to cross,
enough to land,
enough to last till the end of time.
What the
world needs now, love, sweet love.
It's the only thing that there's just too little love.
What the world needs now, love, sweet love.
No, not just for some.
For some, but for everyone.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
All right, here we go. John McLaughlin, longtime host of the McLaughlin Group, the Washington-based political talk show host he created, died on Tuesday at the age of 89. I used to watch that show. I was a political junkie back in those days, and I used to watch the McLaughlin Group. And John was sitting in his chair like he's sitting on a throne, and his panel of guests would be sitting out before him, and he'd be up on his throne throwing questions out at each one of them, political questions of whatever was going on in the politically during that week, and he was great. He was wonderful. I saw him recently, and he looked at really, really gawky. He looked sick, put it that way. He was gawky. He was frail. He was, you can tell that something was wrong. I mean, he was totally out of it, but he was still hosting the show. He was hosted the show, and he will be missed. I mean, I think I first gained my sense of wanting to talk about politics watching his show. And I used to do it every Sunday. He's come on. I can't think of a lot of the guests he had on his show, but I'm pretty sure McLaughlin missed an episode of his syndicated television show due to illness on Sunday. Yeah, Pat Buchanan, this guy was one of the panel guests, and also he was a regular on the show. He was a regular panelist all the time, and there was some other people that were regulars. Some of them passed away way before John did. Okay, Pat Buchanan, a regular panelist, said it was the first episode McLaughlin had missed in the show's 34 years on the air, according to the news site Deadline. Okay, McLaughlin taped a voiceover, however, to introduce a discussion segment, Trade About Policy. Okay. As a former Jesuit priest, teacher, pundit, and news host, John touched many lives, the McLaughlin Group family said in a Facebook message announcing his death. Now that he has said bye-bye for the last time. Yeah, he used to always say bye-bye, bye-bye. Whenever the show was ending, he would say bye-bye, but now he's gone. The message didn't give a cause of death, but he was old, he was frail, that you can tell that there was something wrong with John. And I really got my political roots watching and listening to this show, because I was always interested in what they were saying. He was a pundit. He was a Republican. Okay. I mean, not all Republicans. I don't hate all Republicans. I don't think all Republicans are awful. A few maybe, but not all. So I don't want to generalize that and lump everybody in the same basket or anything. But the McLaughlin Group, which aired Sunday mornings on public television, Channel 11, stations across the country, a panel of discussions of current and political and policy topics. McLaughlin would typically introduce an issue, then open it up to discussion among his panelists, and who included both liberals and conservatives. So it was an interesting show. I loved the talk show. I loved it. I believe that's one of the reasons why I'm on the air now, because of the McLaughlin Group and my grandmother. I can't forget her. So he won't be missed. John McLaughlin, dead at the age of 89, 34 years on the McLaughlin Group. And I was one of those viewers of that show. And he will be missed. He will be missed. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We will be right back, folks. We don't do this right now. And here we go. Thank you. So how much you got on here?
Father.
$3. I called them.
Open
eyes. And they were right.
That we may see to follow thee, Lord, grant us thy loving peace, and let all dissension cease. Thy faith each day increase.
All right, I want to thank my guest, author Alexis Nicole. I will see you guys tomorrow. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm sorry I cut that off. Time really, really, really fast. So thanks a lot. Join me tomorrow, folks. Bye-bye.